Welcome to the Aviation Safety Community Podcast, presented by the Aviation Safety Community and Flight Logics, dedicated to progressing aviation safety, leadership, training, and research in the air and on the ground. In today's episode, our host, Grenville Hudson, interviews Sally Tyndall, a human factors specialist and an astronaut candidate at Advancing X.
Hello and welcome to the Aviation Safety Community Podcast. Today I have Sally Tyndall with me, and Sally is a qualified A330 pilot and has been a Learjet delivery pilot, human factors researcher and a safety specialist. Since 2018, Sally has been associated with the Advancing X Career Astronaut Program and a very, very welcome person indeed. Hi, Sally, how are you going?
Good, Grenville. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no worries. Just you could give us a bit of a background of yourself, and then maybe we could talk a bit about being an astronaut candidate. It sounds exceptionally exciting.
I think it is very exciting. Certainly, I got into flying only because my brothers raced cars and it was the only thing I could think of that was faster. So that just gives you a bit of an insight as to how competitive we all are in our family. But I took up flying primarily because at the time, you must be a pilot to qualify for the NASA astronaut candidacy program. And back then it was very specific. You had to be a pilot, you had to be a test pilot. And so that's what I went and did. In 2011, the space shuttle program was grounded and there was no need to marry myself off to someone in the United States and change my nationality and all that jazz that comes with getting employment at NASA. And so I had to just be happy with the flying that I was doing, which was extraordinary. And I really loved that. But very quickly, it wasn't quite enough. And so I kept pursuing extra education and research, and learning is something that I am addicted to. Some people do sport. Learning is my sport. And I was just fortunate actually to stumble upon Advancing X in 2018, well and truly after I had given up all hope that I had any chance of getting into space. And then, no pun intended, space really took off. We saw Blue Origin, Virgin Galactic, SpaceX, all doing phenomenal things. And whilst the Advancing X program is not space tourism was also taking off in the background as well. And so I very much saw that my qualifications in human factors were going to be needed in these fields. And so I was still very happily flying, but when COVID hit and I was stood down, I knew that my skill sets that I had picked up along the way were going to transition and translate into other industries quite swiftly. And so I was very fortunate when we stopped flying for COVID, I could just pick up and keep on going with my skill set. That includes doing research and promoting Advancing X, which is what I do a lot when I'm not able to travel to do challenges and to do training, which I would like to be doing. But the Advancing X candidates are from all over the world. And at various times, countries are closed, COVID's prominent, COVID's recovering. And so a lot of the colleagues and competitors that are associated with Advancing X are all stuck in their respective countries. And we're just doing our own thing until we can all come together and to keep going with our training.
Right. And so Advancing X, what exactly do they do?
So he's a very humble man, actually. So I always get an email after I've done a podcast saying, you didn't have to talk about me like that. But Advancing X is founded by a brilliant man named Dr. Eduardo Diaz, who in 2015 published his thesis on a subject called OTI, which is the Organizational Training Index. And basically, it's a mathematical formula that can predict team dynamics and team outcomes. And so what that means is, you know, you could go into very large corporations that have thousands of staff who all work together, and his matrix can take people, all different walks of life, and put together the most optimum team to be the most effective. And he's quantified it and he's had it challenged and he's had it accepted and published as his paper. And so what I'm very proud of is the fact that this man could quite have easily gone and just made millions improving productivity in huge workplaces. And instead he went as high as he could possibly go and said to the space programs, you know, the way you recruit, that's been pretty good, but I think I can do it better. And so he's doing the Career Astronaut Program. He's backed by a gentleman by the name of Stephen Gantz in Grainster Labs, where he's applied some of his work already in 2017 before he launched the Astronaut Program. But effectively, it is putting together the most optimum teams. So in the future, and it's not too distant future, when we need not tourism astronauts, but qualified astronauts, he has teams ready to go to do whatever corporations need us to do.
Mm. And this term that I've seen on the website, their predictive team matrix, what is that?
So the predictive team matrix is the basis of OTI, and basically what it is, it's a series of stress challenges where your behaviour is monitored and you fill out surveys as you go, and your behaviour and your outcome is quantified and related against the people that you work with. So then it can be put into the matrix and the most optimum and the most efficient team for the task that you were given can be selected. Obviously, that has to be tested, and he tests it against randomly selected groups. And I think from the website, the latest statistics is his OTI has a 95% success rating in putting together a better team than the randomly selected team, which is phenomenal if you then think about its global applications in terms of diving, rail, nuclear, medicine, anywhere where people work together, which ironically in COVID, we're all at home not working with other people. But when we get back out there, anywhere where we liaise and work together has phenomenal impacts. And I think that it's just a joy that we get to dip our toe into it in space first, as opposed to other big industries. But the outcome, as you can see with the progression that is happening in the field of aerospace, is phenomenal. You know, we have not seen since the 1960s space and space development accelerate at the rate that it is since then than we are now. You know, putting Raptor engines on water tanks and taking them off and hovering them at 150 meters and having them land vertically on concrete pads is insane. And we've only seen that happen in the last 3 years. And now we're very close to see the likes of SpaceX launch Starship and attempt its first orbit flight. That's phenomenal growth. And that comes from people examining human behaviour to just get the best out of the person and the best out of the team.
So how do they, you said like there's a 95% positive match with the people in the team. Tell us a bit more about that. I'd like to know how you assess this and how you know that it's actually happening.
I don't assess it. I'm actually one of Dr. Diaz's guinea pigs, I guess. So the specifics of the mathematics behind the matrix would have to be directed towards him. But I certainly know that to get OTI accepted and to get it published, of course, it has to go up in front of a review panel, which means that, and I can't remember the exact numbers of variables he used in his 2015 thesis, but it was a staggering amount in terms of an optimum team completing a task versus a sporadic team completing a task. And when you read the thesis, it was actually quite a simple task that this group was doing, but it's then future application from using the matrix that was assessed and designed became, you know, his bread and butter and his success story. But in terms of the mathematics behind it, I'm not familiar because I'm actually...
That's okay.
Astronaut candidates that are jumping through all these hoops and doing these challenges and seeing where I fit in his experiment.
So in these teams that you've described, like the sporadic team, what would be a layman's term around a sporadic team? What would you say would be typical of a sporadic team?
Typical of a sporadic team is just something picked at random. There is no one sporadic in Advancing X. So the first group of astronaut candidates that went through rounds 1 through 3 of the challenges, and I was very fortunate enough to be in group 1, were just extraordinary, talented people who actually have the qualifications to be in their own respective country's space programs. So in terms of the people that are selected by Advancing X, they're not what I would refer to as random people. But if we were to select ourselves based on the crew members we were getting along with, that would be a sporadic team. You say, oh, I like you, we get along, let's just go and do this challenge. Whereas Dr. Diaz picks the teams, and I can say we've done an underwater stress test challenge that was extraordinary, and we went out into the lava fields of the desert and were given some stress challenges in these underground lava tunnels. That was extraordinary. And again, we were surveyed, we were all filmed throughout the whole process, and our behaviour was observed throughout the whole, was almost a week. We were all together, and we are still going through the process. So we're up to challenge group 1, our group's up to challenge 4 now. There'll be 15 challenges throughout before the experiment is considered complete and the optimum team for what Ed's referring to as his Advancing X competition will be complete. But for the moment, he's still taking candidates for that program. Mm. In the background, there is still a lot of other stuff going on at Advancing X. They're taking on joint ventures and collaborations and agreements with big companies, certainly industry and aviation, such as the FAA, are very interested in what they can do with OTI and how it can be applied to aviation. Obviously, if you think about it from my background, if you can give OTI to an airline and your training department already can predict that this crew of people are going to work together very harmoniously, but this crew of people may not, what it does highlight is, of course, we've all got to get the job done, but if there is a conflict in a high stress situation like your simulator assessment, you can go back to the matrix and say, well, that was what we predicted, was that that group of people were going to take a bit longer to resolve that issue. And you can just use it to apply it to the grade that that crew gets given for their performance on the day, and then train around it, which is great. So what it means is, unlike, say, the Myers-Briggs temperament indicator that was really prominent in the 80s and 90s, and we're all talking about your personality and what your career guidance counsellor says you should be when you grow up, OTI isn't that. You can be whatever you want to be. You can be yourself. But what it does is it tells you who you should surround yourself who you should surround yourself with to be the most successful person within your own right. So in terms of mass application for business, I think it's extraordinary.
And I know you've mentioned on occasions the long range missions, and I was just wondering if you could talk about HF issues associated with long range missions.
So there are some things being worked on currently. There's a thing called the optic nerve paradigm, which is a physical situation that they're working on. A lot of in excess of 200 day in space astronauts come home with vision impairment. Those sorts of things are being worked on. But what we're not seeing is studies done on the implications of being away for so long. And there are vast groups of people called analog astronauts already in the desert, and there's a few locations that do it, where they volunteer and they do go and isolate themselves. There's a 2-week analog mission. There's a 2-month analog mission. There's even 6-month analog mission where astronauts go and they're in a habitat situation. They are isolated and they go and do experiments. There is a mission control. And that is human factors based. There's all psychologists that run those missions and experiments to make sure that when we send people into space, we're not sending manic depressives that are going to get into space and then 5 days in say, actually, this wasn't for me, I want to come home. So you need to know for the money that we're investing in the program that you've got the right people that have the right mindset, the right team that's going to get along, and that you've experimented that you've put those people and others with similar personalities in the analog missions, and we've tried it and then we've rectified ways to fix it. One of the ways moving forward that's planning on being used to help astronauts cope with long-range missions is virtual reality. So they can put on the goggles, they can come home, they can sit in their lounge room virtually and they can have a meal with their family, or they can go to the beach. They can use essential oils so you can smell the grass. And these are all feedback that we've received from the long-range astronauts, like the famous the Kelly brothers experiment, that the astronauts missed when they were in space. And so we're going to simulate it and then help them cope for hopefully Mars and beyond.
Right. And what's your view on this in terms of your personal view on traveling for so long?
Personally, for me, I have a 7-year-old, so I'm not that keen to sign up for years and years away. For the moment, I like him quite a bit. Maybe when he's a bit old, he's eating me out of house and home, I'll put my hand up to do it. There's a list a mile long of people that would kill to do it. I'm very, very interested in the psychology of it. So no matter who goes and how long they go for, I certainly want to be there working with them and cheering them on and analysing the results. Whatever happens in terms of the future and space, I want to be a part of it, because I think that's what I tell people the most when I go and do talks in schools and things is, by the time the space shuttle program was grounded in 2011, I thought my chance was done and dusted. And really my career sort of actually took off after that. So it's never too late to start. Certainly the qualifications that you needed when I started has changed dramatically. You don't need to be a test pilot now. You don't need to just do maths and physics. We need geologists, we need psychologists, we need miners, we need people to, if you're good at remote control cars and drones, you're going to be good in space, because some of the early mining equipment is going to be remotely operated. So there are careers that we haven't even thought of yet for all academics, for all demographics. And so I really think that if you want to have a career in space, you can have one no matter who you are, and that's tall, short, fat, thin, gay, straight, able-bodied, and more importantly, disabled-bodied, because when you're in weightlessness, you don't need 2 arms, 2 legs and yeah, to be physical. And I think that where Advancing X has set the tone in leaps and bounds is this mindset that you don't need to be a specific nationality to apply. They're taking candidates for over 100 countries, I think they have now. And that to me makes perfect sense, because the world of space needs to be global. It certainly needs to be universal. And that's why we have space law and we come together and we have general space agreements. That's why the International Space Station is made up of modules from multi-countries. I think that long gone are the days where it's countries competing against one another to get to space. I think we need to work together and make space the solution to some of the problems that we've created on Earth if we are going to preserve the species.
Yeah, well, that's a whole new story that we could talk about for hours. This is an interesting thing that you're talking about with this these organizational training index and predictive team matrix. You know, where does leadership sit in all of this?
I think that, and of course I've seen this in aviation quite a bit, you can put 20 leaders in a room and they will still reshuffle into their own natural hierarchy. I think when it comes to something like space, you know, there will always be a mission control, a chain of command. And you know that if you want to get there, you will do it. Mm-hmm. So it's not something I don't think space has ever seen before in terms of people going rogue. There was definitely a very famous case on Skylab where the crew had a bit of a moment where they just wanted some time to themselves and they switched off the communications for a while and had a rest, but they finished the mission well and truly on schedule because we're human and human things will happen. Sometimes, much like this lockdown situation, you need to just switch off, take a breath, yeah, and back on with it. I think certainly by the time you get to space, you have been put through enough stressful situations with your team that those behaviours will reveal themselves in the process of training anyway. So it's not something that many behavioural specialists are concerned about because the process is so robust and you're monitored throughout the whole way that normally before something like that where you've got too many leaders, too many cooks spoiling the broth, so to speak, it can, that behaviour can be predicted and nipped in the bud pretty quickly.
Right. So is there like a process for leadership selection as much as there is for the team selection?
No, I think that the difference is with Advancing X is everyone's a leader. Mm. Everyone is their own subject matter expert. I think what you'll find is in the early days of the Mercury 7 program, because they were all subject matter experts in military test flying, they were all sort of pitted against one another. The Advancing X program's not like that because you can be whoever you are. And so I'm actually the only commercial pilot I think they have in the program at the moment. There's a lot of physicists, we've got biologists, we certainly have geologists, and they know that I take the mickey out of geology because I find it really boring, even though they find it very exciting. When it comes time to the challenges that we face, whether it's on a simulated mission or an actual mission, that person who's the subject matter expert in that field will then become the leader. Long gone are the days where we have to manually disconnect a capsule and manually fly it, but I can imagine that there will be a pilot type of person on board every mission just in case. But we're not seeing that these days, that the capsules are having to be manually flown that often. We have had many examples of the space shuttle was launched with nothing but one pilot qualified and the rest mission specialists to do what they have to do. They are not going to launch when, by the time the shuttle program wrapped up, they had agreed, they being NASA, I'm sorry, had agreed that they were not ever going to launch a crew into space ever again that weren't qualified at a spacewalk that was discovered after one of the missions where a crew was launched into space was when one of the foam tiles dislodged and there was damage to the shuttle and they didn't have anyone on board qualified to do an EVA and go and inspect that. And so that was, okay, we didn't know that. And so, you know, that's something that was learnt from practice, and I'm sure as we keep going into space we will keep learning from those types of things, but it's not, we're never going to stop learning. So I think that in terms of allowing people to shine, getting rid of that concept of who's the leader is probably one of the first ways to make it very successful, is just understanding that everyone is equally as important as each other. Yes, that ultimately there'll be someone making the decisions in the end of the day, but certainly for us to get to the moon, to practice mining on the moon, and then to get from the moon to Mars, we need very diverse skill sets, in which case they're being recruited from all over the world.
Sure. Sally, are you able to give us a bit of information on the Human Factors Week? I know you're presenting Am I right in saying that?
I'm very, very lucky. I had to learn how to scuba dive to undertake some of these challenges with Advancing X. I absolutely was determined that I wasn't going to love scuba diving. It was just something I needed to learn to do these neutral buoyancy experiments. But egg on my face, I absolutely fell in love with scuba diving and very much learnt very quickly that there are some human factors people, human factors practitioners in the world of scuba diving that are exceptional practitioners in human factors. And here I always thought that aviation set the tone and that other industries always learnt from aviation. I was dead wrong. And so what we are seeing on the 24th of September in the UK, but of course we've learnt to be global Zoom calling citizens, Gareth Locke is hosting the first ever Human Factors in Diving conference, for which I am presenting one of the modules. But as I've gone through Gareth Locke's Human Factors courses, I have learned so much about human factors that has an abundance of applications in aviation. And so what I'm thrilled about is, despite the fact that I'm presenting at a dive conference, a number of my aviation colleagues are dialing in to see what can be learnt from an industry that they haven't actually ever tapped into and how it can be applied to commercial aviation, to space travel. And I'm really looking forward to gelling, you know, my former career and my hobby into this amazing Human Factors conference. And I think it's going to be very, very exciting.
So when's that, Sally? What's the date on that?
The 23rd and the 24th of September, UK time. If you either look up myself, there's definitely a link to it. Otherwise, it's a gentleman by the name of Gareth Locke, who has a company called The Human Diver. And it's advertised, and I'll send you the link, Grenville, so you can put it
Thank
up.
You. But yeah, we will.
Yeah, and there are a number of speakers from the medical community, from the technical diving community, from sure. recreation, and I'm doing a presentation called From the Sea to the Stars to talk about how diving helps us get into space, but also how aviation human factors has helped diving with the introduction of things like checklists and things like that. So I think there's a lot that can be taken from it. And certainly it's a great way for people to be able to see what I study and then reach out and ask any questions that they like.
Sally, look, it's been absolutely fascinating. And I'm sure that we could all talk for quite a while longer, and hopefully we'll have another go at it in the near future, because there's some fascinating things there. I'm very interested to hear about the diving and the aviation connection. So that sounds very interesting. Anyway, many thanks for coming on our show, and lovely talking to you.
Thank you. You too.
See you now. Bye.
We would like to thank our sponsor for this episode, Flight Logics, for their continued support during this podcast's production. Flight Logics, providing low-cost aviation safety department solutions. Thanks for listening to this episode. Be sure to like and subscribe if you enjoyed our content, and if you're interested in learning more, feel free to find us at aviationsafetycommunity.com.au. Or if you wish to continue learning more about aviation safety, please look at our previous episodes or our webinar presentation series. Thanks for listening.